What shield?
Four.
And what strand?
Six.
So this is unit 1.4.6. So we're now continuing on our journey in the East Ring, that Ring 1, which is, again, in the spirit of welcoming. What causes people to feel safe in a fundamental way and helps them to really open up and connect as newcomers or as children, right? So these are the two things that we look at. And the attribute that we're zeroing in on is the southwest attribute, which is called empathy. And empathy is a sign that connection is actually happening. So, you know, we develop empathy for our pets because we connect to them. And when we first get an animal, we don't necessarily feel empathetic with it, but after we've had it for a while and we've built that bond, we know when it's hungry. We know when it's thirsty, we know when it has to go out, we know when it's bothered by something, and it seems to know when we're bothered by something. Like, there's so many stories from people with their pets. The cat knew exactly where my body hurt and then came and laid on me right on that spot and purred right there for the longest time, and it made me feel better. This is empathy. It's working in both directions. You know, empathy itself is essentially feeling what others are feeling. But we will feel what others are feeling when we're connected to them, when we're bonded. So you could say that empathy is the attribute that says connection is there, right? When we look at what builds empathy, especially with children, there is a practice that is intuitive, and all the researchers have pointed this out. Children quite naturally, without direction from adults, without modeling from other children, will go and bond with one place, and they'll build a magical connection with that place. And, you know, we've heard lots of stories over the years about this and what it looks like, and people can remember back to that time, maybe for their own children or for other people's children or for their own childhood. They'll remember having that magical relationship with a place. You know, and maybe we might see it as that realm of fantasy where they're making up little characters and creating whole little worlds. You know, for me, my memory is a dirt pile behind my parents' house. The dirt pile came about because they dug an in-the-ground pool with a liner, and then the dirt was cast off the edge of the hill and it went down into the woods. But that was such an awesome dirt pile. I spent so much time there as a young boy. I was making roads along the dirt pile and then digging tunnels, and I was putting all my little Tonka toys out there, sneaking them out a few at a time. And I mean matchbox, I should say, because it seems like these worlds that children build are always small. And it's about bonding with place, you know. And when I'm working with modern adults and I'm like, okay, how can I regenerate that bond with place and develop that empathy with place? That we instinctively did as children, right? If we were given the space, and especially unsupervised space, you know, there's no parents around to tell us to do this or not do that. It's no coincidence that my dirt pile was just out of sight of my mother doing dishes in the kitchen. It was literally right off the hill where she couldn't see me. And how I accessed that place, she couldn't see. Right? So I walked through the backyard, I kind of found, and this is all without instruction, and by the way, all the research points that all children figure this out when given space. They find that place that no one can see them, especially their parents, and that's where they build that little world. So if the backyard is constricted and there's bushes in the backyard, they crawl into the bushes and they make that little fairy world inside of the overhanging branches of whatever that is, the weeping willow, whatever it is. But they are really literally looking for that you can't see me, I can't see you feeling. Especially with the parents, and they are in that place free to be completely safe to fantasize out loud. And in this case, their peer is nature itself, right? So there was one story of this that ended up making this called the secret spot, because the grandmother in a particular story from a book, The Education of Little Tree, the grandmother is talking, the grandfather is talking to the grandchild about how we all have that place that we go, which is our secret place, right? But we can call that phenomenon the secret spot. And or the sit spot, we call it today. Because when I'm working with modern adults and I'm trying to regenerate that remembrance of that part of our nervous system, I ask them to adopt one place and to go to that place every day as often as they can for as long as they can. And just to do what? Well, just to sit, just to be. Well, that's boring, you know. And they go and they sit and they keep looking at their watch and then they jump up. And a lot of people say, well, first of all, I can't find that place, right? There is no such place, you know, because in their mind, they have this picture. And I think that we have an intuition of what that place is supposed to look and feel like. And I think we all have a similar kind of pattern to it. You know, it's got views, tends to be slightly elevated. It tends to have big sky views, but it also has privacy. It has a certain mixture of openness and forest cover. And we are sensing in our mind's eye, this is what I'm looking for, and then we can't find that exact picture. So we might walk and walk and walk and never find it, right? So then we don't get a sit spot. The other thing that research is showing is that people who had it as children and have found that place, and because children are less discerning, in my case, a dirt pile, right? Underneath the bush in the yard, in the side yard, children will find that place, they'll go into it, they'll bond with it, they'll develop this really strong connection to that place, and then the parents unknowingly will pull them away from that place because they got the bigger house that they've always wanted that has two bedrooms instead of one bedroom, or, you know, the career move, I'm going to get a raise so I'm going to be able to provide for my children even better than the way I was. But when we do that, the children basically feel traumatized because they've created this fairy world, this empathetic connection, and this peer bond with the earth itself. And then we pull them out of it. And then when we put them in the next place, they don't bond again in the same way. And the research is showing that most modern children have that. Most modern adults have that. And part of the reason why they won't do it again as adults is because on an unconscious level, they're afraid to bond again with nature at that level because of the hurt that was never processed the first time. And so again, if you look at hunter-gatherer nomadic tribes, then you have to ask the question, well, if they're moving all the time, how come they don't suffer from that experience? And I'm going to point right back to the phenomenon we talked about in other sections here, in that every family knows how to process these little traumas that occur on a daily basis. And every family is attentive to that. So the grandmothers, the grandfathers are watching the children. They realize that that child has built this little fairy world or whatever you want to call it, this little fantasy world where this bond took place. The grandmother, the grandfather, the aunt, the uncle, they have the good sense to know that that child is going to feel a loss when they move. And so they basically catch their story. They allow them to express themselves. They allow them to cry. They witness, they affirm, they recognize the trauma that's occurring there. And so when they move to the new place, they feel free to bond again. Whereas what I was told when we moved from one house to the next, I remember distinctly being told, oh, don't worry, there'll be another place like this when you get to the new place that you can do that with. And I'm telling you, when I landed at the new house, I did not feel that way. I actually felt really uncomfortable in my body. I actually literally remember the feeling that something was taken from this part of my body, like there was an emptiness, a ripping feeling in my gut. And it took me a while to actually want to get a sit spot again. And it wasn't until Tom Brown came along that he actually forced me to get a sit spot. Because he wouldn't take me camping in the Pine Barrens to my favorite fishing hole unless I actually made the commitment to go and sit by myself in the forest again a lot. Because he knew that part of my development as a tracker, naturalist, whatever you want to call that thing that he was passing on to me from his lineage, was related to the need for me to build really strong bonds with the trees, the birds, the animals, and to know all the plants and the weather and the wind and the stars and the sun, which you don't get to know if you're moving all the time. So by building those strong relationships in place, you're literally trying to develop, you know, what I would call, you know, ropes of connection as thick as what you have with pets, with the trees, with the songbirds in your yard, you know, with the deer that come through now and again. You're literally learning to build bonds by creating relationship with one spot. And so the sit spot, you know, if we call it that, is the place where we get to know intimately, not just, you know, the cognitive ideas about nature, but that's where we start to recognize these deeper relationships, and we start to feel in our bodies when the birds are upset. We start to notice things through our empathy, not only through our thoughts. By sitting still and being coaxed to sit still and being asked questions from, you know, coming and going from a sit spot experience or a bonding spot with one place that you're going to regularly, you know, the mentors in your life start asking you good questions, and their job is to coax out those relationships with all the things that live around you and to strengthen and thicken the ropes of connection, at which point empathy kicks in. So quite literally, you feel in your stomach when the robin is upset when the crow is near the nest. You literally feel your own stomach pulsing because the robin's stomach is pulsing because of the deep anxiety he or she is feeling to protect their young from this nest predator, right? This is empathy kicking in. When the bird's feelings become your feelings, you're really awakening to what your nervous system is designed for. And why do we have that? We're hardwired for that. For what reason? Well, you know, we don't always get to know all the intricate details cognitively of everything that's going on in the communication system of nature around us. But by walking with empathy for life around us, you know, an alarm going off from a particular bird that we may never have seen before hits our gut in a particular way. It stops us in our tracks. We turn and we look, and then we notice the leopard hiding in the shadows, right? It happens like that. The body feels it first. Then the mind says, what's going on here? You know, Ingwe talked a lot about this. He said, you know, there was times in his life where his feet were stepping one in front of the other, and all of a sudden his feet wouldn't move anymore. And then he said the first time it happened, he was like looking at his feet and saying, why did you stop? I didn't tell you to stop, you know. Who put you in charge, feet, you know? So he was about to walk, but he had such a sinking feeling in his body that he listened. And then he stepped back, and then he was looking in the grass. He didn't see anything, you know, and he looked up ahead. And then as he looked straight ahead and let his eyes diffuse, he caught this movement up in the shadows of the tree. And it was the tip of a leopard's tail. And the leopard was laying in wait on a tree branch that went over the trail he was walking on. He was about to walk directly under this ambush predator who was waiting for just such an opportunity, right? And he said the next time his body stopped, he first looked for a leopard. And he didn't see one. But instead, this time what he saw was a break in the pattern in the shadows where the leaf shadows were on the ground, and he noticed a little section of a puff adder's body across the trail. And then he looked at the distance of his footsteps. He would have stepped right on it if he hadn't seen it. But because his body stopped, he was able to perceive it. And this is why we're hardwired for empathy, probably, partially. I think we're also hardwired for empathy because it makes us better at caring for our offspring and caring for our loved ones. It makes us better members of our culture, our community, so that we can take care of each other, right? We're hardwired for empathy. And what is kicking this empathy in is nothing less than these ropes of connection themselves. So again, when people did surveys of what you might call intuitive or telepathic experiences among human beings, Rupert Sheldrake did a lot of this work, the scientist, and he said that it was most likely between twins, higher likelihood between twin girls. It was also really highly likely between mothers and daughters. You know, like, in other words, females have a stronger tendency towards empathy. But as you get out into more and more common experiences, it often involves pets. Like, a lot of people have, you know, what you might call telepathic experiences with pets. And then when you get among the Bushmen, you find out that the Bushmen have essentially what we would call telepathic experiences with virtually everything in nature. And remember, the Bushmen are the genetic ancestors of all humans, which to me says we all have the same wiring as them. And then we start looking at this whole empathy piece as the root of this so-called telepathy, but it's not, you know, as Gilbert Walkingbowl said to us again, that a person who grew up traditional, raised among his grandmothers and grandfathers in the traditional way here in North America, he said, you know, you guys think it's psychic power, telepathy. He said, it's not. He said, it's practical. He said, my people were practical people, hunter-gatherer people. He said, every single human being, if they're going to grow up in their adulthood to have children or to take care of children, there's going to be a time when that child is too young to speak the language. And something is bothering that child. He said, how is a mother supposed to understand that when that child does not have the words yet to express what's wrong with that child? He said, we are designed to be telepathic. You guys call it psychic power, telepathy. It's not that. He said, it's just what a human being needs to be a parent. Right? We have to know how to understand these children before they have language. Right? So we're designed for that, essentially saying. And he said, and also, you would not be a very effective hunter-gatherer if you had to rely only on what you could figure out with your mind. You know, and he started telling stories similar to Ingwe's, that, you know, danger, you can sense it before you run into it, but you can also find game using the same thing. It works in all directions, right? So that just kind of piles one thing on top of the other here, and how all this comes together is something that Bushman said to a friend of mine when my friend was trying to discern what does it mean to be a Bushman? And the Bushman finally explained that, okay, I've really been thinking about it. This is what I think it means to be a Bushman. You know, in the morning when I wake up, I'm walking around the place where we're sleeping. He said, I see this little bird in this one area that I wander around in each morning. And that little bird looks at me first time, and I look at that little bird, and something goes between our eyes, which he says, I recognize that little bird. But it's not like I recognize what species it is. It's more like I see you as a being, you see me as a being. The moment that acknowledgement, that greeting of eyes happens and that feeling of energy passes between us, a thread will form between me and that little bird. And each time I see that same individual little bird, so like I would say, if you put like a band on its ankle with a very unique marking, and then tomorrow morning you went out and saw that same exact band on that same individual bird, that bird sees you the second day, already there's an excited feeling. It's like, oh, I'm seeing you again. It's so nice to see you again. And that thread gets thicker just from recognizing that it's the same one as yesterday. Because it's going in both directions. Now, this comes from going to the same place every day. You see what I mean now? Now, he said, eventually, I see this bird each day as I go, and I eventually figure out it's a male because he's singing one day, right? And then I see him the next day carrying some food in his beak, and he's being really affectionate towards another one that looks somewhat like him, and I realize he's courting, and then he feeds her, and I think, oh, it reminds me of when I fell in love with my wife. He said, so that thread becomes a string. You know, as I begin to see myself and itself, there's something similar between us, right? And then one day I come out there and I realize that they're raising children, they've made a nest, you know, the cord is getting thicker. And then I get out one day and I hear my little friend and his wife and they're very upset, and I feel in my own stomach this sound and this feeling, and I'm so feeling the fear that I have to go see what's bothering my friend. And as I get closer, I see there's other birds that are there too, and they're shouting also. And when I get close, the mongoose sees me and runs off. And that reminds me, you know, when the hyena comes around our camp, how we become very upset and we get deeply concerned, and all of us gang together and chase that hyena away from our camp because we feel for our children the same thing that this little bird is feeling for its children. Now that cord is a rope. So he says, this is what it means to be Bushman. We make ropes with everything. The bushes, the trees, the grasses, the insects, the stars, the sun, the moon, the wind, the rain, even the soil and the sand itself. This is what it means to be Bushman. We make ropes with everything. So they also talk it in other conversations with us about that these ropes actually go in both directions. Do you know what I mean? They go in both directions. We can both send energy into the ropes, like if we're hunting for something or if we're looking for a certain plant, that relationship we have with that species, we can feel it in that direction. At the same time, the energy can come the other way. So we can detect the snake when it's hiding, or we can feel the leopard. So it flows in both directions, they say, on the ropes. We can pull on them, or they can pull on us. So I think this is a good description of the kind of empathy that I would like you to imagine, because modern people totally have that kind of empathy with pets. So extend that level of empathy and connection to all things in nature, and it's going to point back to that instinct that we had as young children to develop a relationship with one place, that we could build the ropes with the trees, the birds, the animals. See what I mean? So this is that cultural element that, I'm calling the sit spot or the secret spot, but it's driven by some deep instinct in children to bond with place. So I will end with this image from the Bushmen. When I was with them a couple of years ago, we were watching the moms and elder women working with the whole tradition of this developing the magical fantasy world. And the moms wouldn't let the children do this. They made them sit and watch. The moms got down really low. They built little fairy forts and little grass huts and made little characters and figures, and they played and continued this bonding thing with place and made the children watch. And when they tired of it, only then did they get up and walk away and leave that behind, and then the children all come right to it. And I thought, wow, that's so interesting, because for us, we kind of chase the kids out, and then they sneak away and get out of sight of us, and then they build those little fantasy worlds. For the Bushmen, the moms and the grandmas, and they're modeling it for the children, and I think it's sort of invigorating that instinct in the children, right? So, yeah. Well, thanks for that, and now go get yourself a sit spot. All right.